probably read where Cruz is going, and he's wining and dining and dinners and hotels and all this stuff. He's bribing people, essentially, to vote.
Donald Trump and I are neck and neck here in the state of Indiana. So I want to ask each and every one of you to come out and vote for me.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
It's 5:10 and it is Monday, April 25th, 2016. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another business day. Welcome to Monday on The Opening Bell. Do you feel a little freer today than you did yesterday? This is Tax Freedom Day across the country. It is the day when you have paid all of your projected federal taxes as a share of the U.S. economy. As a matter of fact, here in Illinois, our Tax Freedom Day doesn't come for another few more days until April 29th, but we're getting closer. The total tax burden borne by residents of different states varies considerably depending on the taxing policies, but generally it is the end of this month that we all pay our taxes for the coming year, or at least we're supposed to. Tax Freedom Day today. Let's start with global intel from the WGN Market Desk this morning. Things are not so good overseas this morning, especially in Europe. President Obama has been speaking there about the UK's exit from the European Union. The DAX in Germany is off about 1% this morning. The FTSE and CAC also off as well. In Asia, the Nikkei closed down almost 1% to 133 points. A similar story for the Hang Seng and the Shanghai. There is also some concern this morning about oil prices. Crude oil prices pair gains in early Asia trade today as traders took profit after a strong rally last week on signs that global oil glut might start to ease in the coming months. Tech stocks took their toll on the NASDAQ in the final trading session of the week. The Dow and S&P finished flat. Microsoft, the big drag on all three indices. Google parent Alphabet also losing ground. Both companies reported results after the close Thursday fell short of forecasts. Analyst Katie Stockton of BTIG says the S&P faces some tough times ahead.
There are some seasonal issues as we approach May here in terms of, you know, just people's sentiment, right, going into the summer months. But if we do see a failure to penetrate this 2090 level, the initial support level on the downside would be roughly gauged by the 200-day moving average. Below that, then you get back into that 1950 range. So I think it could get worse before it gets better.
The S&P 500 closed Friday at 2082. This morning, all of the U.S. futures are lower, the Dow, NASDAQ, and S&P. Quarterly profit surged 35% as the all-day breakfast menu proved to be a continuing hit for Oak Brook-based McDonald's. The world's largest chain is also seeing its operations in China and Japan recover after a series of food safety scandals over the last 2 years. So is McDonald's turnaround sustainable? Technomic food consultant David Henkes here in Chicago tells Reuters Business.
What we've seen to date is that rather than bringing check average low by converting people from Big Macs or Quarter Pounders down to a breakfast sandwich, it's bringing in new consumers. And anecdotally, I know a lot of people that are using McDonald's for the first time in several years simply because of all-day breakfast. And so the fact that they've been able to sustain this performance over three quarters and really every quarter show very positive numbers here in the U.S., I think indicates that it's sustainable, certainly over the next couple of years.
We also have an update this morning to that story we reported last week at this time about a drone that was reported to have collided with a British Airways jetliner coming in for a landing at Heathrow Airport. The British Transport Minister says it appears that object may have actually been a floating plastic bag. The minister says the report of a drone was an overreaction. Coming up here on the program this morning, we're going to take a look at education tech, specifically one app called Class Dojo, and how it's helping unite teachers and parents outside of those dreaded teacher-parent conferences.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Asian stocks fell across the board today ahead of policy decisions by the U.S. Federal Reserve and the Bank of Japan, as well as major earnings reports and economic data from Japan and China expected later in the week. The Dow Jones got a boost on Friday from a strong earnings report from McDonald's and ended the week at 18,003. The S&P 500 was flat. The Nasdaq slid nearly 40 points, dragged down by earnings misses from Microsoft and Google parents Alphabet. Apple is expected to announce this week that iPhone sales likely dropped for the first time since the device went on sale in 2007. Apple CEO Tim Cook predicted in January a slide in total revenue. This could signal a tough year overall for the world's largest public company. CVS has issued a nationwide recall of some of its Gold Emblem organic spiced herbal tea for possible salmonella contamination. The recalled tea has a Best Buy date of March 18, 2018. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. 519, technology that connects educators to students' parents and helps them communicate about student activities, social and behavioral issues at school, is among big winners in the venture capital game. One of those apps called Class Dojo has raised $21 million in Series B round of venture funding. Joining us this morning for a conversation about this education tech is Laura Kolodny, a writer for TechCrunch in San Francisco. Laura, thanks for being with us on the Opening Bell this morning. So tell us a little bit about Class Dojo.
Class Dojo is an app that started out as a way for teachers to track points about kids' behavior and social learning in schools, and it's morphed into something more of a community builder, something more like a almost private educational Facebook to connect teachers, parents, and students.
And they have been pretty successful in raising money for this, so it looks like it's going to take off, or it is taking off. How is this going to change the way teachers and parents communicate over their students?
One thing I found really interesting about this app is that it sort of shifts the paradigm away from having a once or twice a semester parent-teacher meeting in person and phone calls and letters that, you know, are passed back and forth sometimes through a student with offending behavior, let's call it. And it makes the communication around a student's life and their experiences in school something that's happening daily, throughout the day even.
And this is important because, you know, with those once-per-semester meetings, a lot can change in between those meetings. And I know a big complaint about parents is, well, why didn't I know about this sooner? This will kind of take that away from that, especially if the parent is busy.
I think that's the goal. I mean, you know, the idea of getting away from once-in-a-while tests and that's the only time you know a student's had a challenge around a certain topic. That's been happening in testing already. It's, you know, adaptive learning. All these different ideas have come to schools. And now Class Dojo is applying that to the social life and the behavioral issues around learning.
Will this require the parent to have a smartphone? Will it require the parent to be technically, you know, able to do some of these things? Because, you know, quite frankly, there are a lot of parents who don't get a lot of this technology.
The app is accessible. You know, there's sort of a browser version and a smartphone version, and honestly, the materials can be printed out and given to parents that don't have tech access. I would believe that most do at this point have some kind of access, whether it's through a public library and a browser on a computer there or their own mobile devices at home. There are a lot of programs that subsidize tech access for students and their families. If you could use a social media app like Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, you can learn to use this.
Class Dojo is just one of several of these kind of apps. They have some competition, don't they? What is their competition like?
There's a really wide range of competition. It ranges from sort of enterprise technology like WebEx or, you know, any kind of traditional and older conferencing technology where you could just video chat with a group of parents or something like this too. Now that's not purpose-built for education, but it can be used in those contexts to things that are new up and coming, like FreshGrade, which is a company founded by the gentleman who was also a founder of Penguin Club, a really popular game for kids that was eventually sold, I believe, to Disney, and different learning management systems. There are actually a really wide range of companies going after this. I think their main competition is a business called Remind, formerly known as Remind 101. Remind started as a way to give teachers a means of notifying parents, you know, just reminding them upcoming tests, this big assignment is due, field trip, we need this involvement from you for something at school. And it's it's morphed into something a bit more like a community building social app as well. Different feel, different goals, but still, it's some of the uses can be seen as overlapping. They're sort of brothers from another mother.
Yeah, and but Class Dojo certainly has, at least from what I'm seeing from statistics, a really good upper hand on this. 85,000 schools apparently are using this in some way. So that's a pretty good head start on some of these other companies, isn't it?
So Class Dojo is what they would call freemium, which means teachers can start using it without having to get budget or buy-in from, you know, the school districts or the supervisors and principals. So it has had great traction. I think the same can be said for Remind. Again, they have some goals that are related, but I think so. Both of those are well ahead of other startup competitors going after this. You know, whether they build learning management systems that are meant to track everything, including grades and behavioral performance from students, to, you know, apps that are more specific around math only or grammar learning only. I mean, there's just a lot going on in EdTech right now. It's sort of because mobile technology has started to come to schools, either from families and students who have their own or through programs that see, you know, Chromebooks coming to an entire district and things like that. EdTech is just, it's lighting up. There's a lot of innovation. There are a lot of new apps available to teachers and families.
And that was sort of my next question, too, is what is the innovation like in this area? What are some of the areas that you're seeing light up, and aside from this specific area?
The social lives of students, the behavioral issues, this is less addressed by EdTech. More companies have gone after making curriculum digital and something that teachers can share with one another across classrooms in the same school or district or across different markets. Digital curriculum, that's been big. Digital testing, sort of the idea of the digital grade book and helping schools get a handle on what, you know, what in their courses, what's working, what's not working. You know, where do we need to get more specialists, dedicate more resources, maybe tweak the kind of content and testing we do in classes. Now, Class Dojo is interesting because the co-founders are both former educators. Well, one was more on the academic side, trying to understand educational technology and science around it, the sort of neuropsych and all these other issues. And the other one was a teacher. And they understand in a really personal way the sort of privacy issues. And they've committed long-term to not selling the data from the app. So teachers are collecting pretty sensitive information about your students' lives and their how they behave, how they progress through different challenges in their lives at school. And that's, you know, privacy is a big issue when it comes to kids and families. And I think that's a huge commitment from them. And I think that's different than some of the other apps are trying to quantify this more and specifically planning to sell report, you know, insights based on the data.
How important to the success of an app like Class Dojo has this education tech accelerator, Imagine K-12, which I believe now is Y Combinator. How important was that in their success?
You know, Imagine K-12 was really creative. They took this idea from the sort of tech venture capital scene of the accelerator and applied it to education, you know, they would call it like a vertical and industry-specific way to encourage and give support to early-stage startups that wanted to solve problems in education. And I think it's been very important. All the companies I've spoken with from K-12 have, you know, not only spoken highly of the program, but also just the kind of community, the alumni community. And it's true, Imagine K-12 has joined a larger accelerator called Y Combinator, which is, you know, sort of known as the most prestigious Silicon Valley-based and pioneering program in North America. So that was an interesting consolidation of efforts there. Mileage may vary, right? Like every company has their own experience, but I've written about a lot of edtech startups and know a wide range of them who went to K-12, and I'm hearing really positive things now. We'll see how it goes now that they're folded into the fray in a much bigger program.
Laura Kolodny is the emerging tech editor and writer at TechCrunch. You can find them on Twitter at TechCrunch. We'll post the link to Laura's latest story on EdTech on our Twitter page. It's 5:28. Let's get an update now on what's coming up on the news with Vic Vaughn.
The president announcing just moments ago in a reversal that he will send more U.S. ground troops to Syria, among them special forces. We have more coming up, Steve.
This is the opening bell on 720 WGN.
From ABC News, tech trends.
How often can you be at the christening of a robot warship?
It's my privilege and honor to christen the Sea Hunter.
The christening of a ship unlike any other.
You are all witnessing history.
Deputy Defense Secretary Robert Work in Portland, Oregon, unveiling an unmanned 132-foot drone warship.
You'd be able to send unmanned warships into areas that are very, very dangerous. You don't want to risk the lives of our servicemen and women.
The ship can keep track of submarines and clear out dangerous sea mines, but some are anxious because the ship, despite not having any humans on board, would be armed.
There's no reason to be afraid of a ship like this. I mean, this is a ship that's going to do what we tell it and nothing more.
The model is just a prototype, but Rear Admiral Bob Garrier thinks this is a big step.
Very excited about this. This is a big deal.
The prototype was built by defense company Leidos. With Tech Trends, I'm Mark Remillard, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. Good morning. The newest perk among a select group of real estate agents is going airborne with top clients in helicopters to show off multi-million dollar listings. It's happening in cities like Miami, Los Angeles, and right here in the Chicago area. Joining us on the Opening Bell this morning is real estate agent Lauren Hsu of LaurenProperties.com. Lauren, welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. So this is a way to really show these clients from the top down what a property looks like, I'm guessing?
Yeah, well, we use it for several different reasons. One of the reasons Jamison Sotheby's came out with this idea was to take clients that are new to Chicago around and give them an idea of what an overview is of Chicago and look at all the different neighborhoods. Because you can quickly get from north side all the way to the south side, over to the west side. You can just show them everything in about 20 minutes, and they can get a real glimpse of, you know, what from the top down does our city look like? How is it laid out? So that's really where it all started.
And how long has this been going on in the Chicago area?
You know, I know Jamison Sotheby's started doing it about, I'd say, 4 months ago. I've used it several times, you know, a couple times to go out and look at the city with a new client and give them an idea. And then the last time I was actually out with a client was actually just a little more for fun. We did a victory lap around the city, because my client was already from Chicago, but her price point was, you know, I think her sale price was $1.6 million. She bought around $900,000, so my company said, you know, we'd love to take her out.
And so I'm guessing that this is only for very well-qualified clients looking at really expensive homes.
The price point that Jamison looks for is around $1 million to $1.5 million. I do have to get authorization from my company, because it is something that Jamison Sotheby's is paying for. So, you know, that's what they look for in that price point. And sometimes there's exceptions, but I do have to get it approved by them. If it's lower than that, then it's something that I would have to chip in for.
So what are the pluses and minuses of doing something like this?
I mean, there's really no minuses. You know, a client's face lights up. It's a big wow factor. I think it helps us stand out above other brokers, offering them something really different. You know, how many real estate agents say, hey, let's get in a helicopter and go out and look at some property? So it's a big wow factor. I really don't see any minuses, except for I did have one client say, I don't know about that, scary. You know, that she was a little nervous and didn't really want to go up. So, but most people do. They think it's great.
I can think of a couple of bonus points, too, with this. I remember when I was looking for a home, it took forever to get from point A to point B in traffic and all of those sort of hassles. I guess you kind of just glide right over all of that, don't you?
Oh, yeah, you do. Unfortunately, we're not allowed to land in the city of Chicago. The last helicopter ride that I took, he said, you know, it's against city ordinance. You can't land in the city, which makes sense. From place to place. But if you go in, you know, farther north into the suburbs or farther west, some of it is allowed, and you can go from house to house as long as they have a big yard and, you know, you have your schedule set up, you can do it.
And so give us a sense of what it is the clients see from this bird's eye view.
Well, I haven't done it in the suburbs, you know, to go house to house yet. We've done it more in the city. And I would say the bird's eye view is, it's really unique. I mean, with the last client that I was up with, she wanted to go over her old property that she had just sold, which was a beautiful penthouse in the South Loop at 14th in Michigan. So it's kind of fun just to go over it and look at, oh, that's where I used to live, and see it from up top. And, oh, there's my old balcony, and just, you know, looking at her neighborhood. And then we zipped over to her new condo. And then, you know, it's like, look at the difference in the neighborhood. Oh, I'm, you know, so much closer to the lake. Look what's right there. You know, just the differences of what's, you know, each little, you know, building and a couple restaurants and things you can see from up there. It was kind of fun for her just to look at where she's going to live at now and the new things she'll have access to. And she's just really moving 10 minutes away, but it's different. You know, every 10 minutes our city changes. There's new things to offer. Where she's at, she's going to be closer to the beach. So it's kind of fun to see that from up above. And we did it a little more for fun with her. So that was the difference up there.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is not just something that you just get into a helicopter and go. Real estate agents like yours and the others, the Jameson Brokers, have, as an example, they make an event out of this, don't they, with sometimes lunch. And this is a fancy kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it can be. It depends on what our clients have time for. But, I mean, as soon as you get down, that's, you know, something you are definitely excited about and want to talk about. So it's a great time to go to lunch after. But, yeah, we definitely can make an event out of it. And it takes a little time to get set up. We have to, you know, submit everything. We have to schedule it. They have to know your weight, you know, who's coming on the ride with my client. Sometimes they want to bring their, you know, daughter or son or their significant other. So all of that depends on how big of a helicopter we're getting. So we have to do some prep. And, you know, by the time you are going to be, you know, up in the air for a couple, you know, at least an hour, it's a couple hours out of your day, we do make it an event.
And I want to get into, when we come back after traffic, just how much this costs a client, or whether or not this is something that the broker picks up, and what kinds of properties might be better suited for this than others. So we're having a conversation this morning with Lauren Hsu, House Hunting by Helicopter, just one of the latest perks in the real estate world. We'll continue our conversation.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
5:48 on The Opening Bell from the WGN Market Desk this morning. Dow futures are off this morning, about 15 points a week on the S&P and NASDAQ as well, indicating a mixed open on Wall Street, perhaps. Also, crude oil trading lower this morning as well. Let's get the latest on commodities. And good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Steve, good morning. And I'm hoping we don't have another day like we had last Friday in the grain market, where profit-taking took over. Wheat and soybeans tumbled sharply. We had wheat, soybeans, and corn lower for the day, and they were some huge declines. For example, the nearby May contract in soybeans down 34¾ cents, May corn down 13¼, and May wheat down 30 cents. And today, of course, we'll be watching for the planting progress report. That'll be out at 3 o'clock this afternoon. But this morning, I'll be heading for Washington, D.C., an annual visit for farm broadcasters from around the country to spend time on Capitol Hill talking to members of Congress, time in the Department of Agriculture visiting with the Secretary, Tom Vilsack, and his associates, and also talking to agricultural lobby groups in our nation's capital. Big topics on the minds of everybody in agriculture: trade agreements, market prices, of course, and concern about the outcome of the federal election and its impact on agricultural policy, particularly trade policy in this country. So I'll be checking in from Washington, D.C. again tomorrow and Wednesday. Have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. Back to our conversation now with Lauren Hsu, House Hunting by Helicopter. Lauren is with laurenproperties.com in Chicago, in the Chicago area. Lauren, before we went to our break, we were talking about how cool this is and how it's been going on in Chicago for a while, but I'm interested to know if the How the neighbors view this, first of all, how the sellers view it when they have somebody flying over their house in a helicopter, but also how the neighbors view this when there's a perhaps a low-flying helicopter coming in.
You know, I'm not really sure because I haven't been on the other end for people to complain to me. I've heard that some people that are sellers, let's say your home and you're eating breakfast in your condo and there's a low-flying helicopter, I've heard that it makes them a little nervous or they don't really care for it because we can look, you know, pretty much directly into people's windows. But I haven't been on the other side of that for a seller to say, oh, I was home and this happened, to complain to me about it. But I have heard that a few people don't care for it.
There's a little bit of planning that goes into all of this. I understand that realtors like you use Google Maps and other sort of software to make sure you get the right view from this chopper, right?
You know, it's more the people that are taking us up in the helicopter that plan all of that, not me. I really just go along for the ride. They do ask ahead of time, where do you want to go? So are there specific properties you want to fly over? Is there a specific route you want to start out with your client? What is the goal today? Are we looking at specific areas or specific streets, or is this just a victory lap? What do you want to do? Mm-hmm. So it's really up to them.
And I can't imagine that this is cheap. Who pays for this? How much does it cost?
Well, in my case, I haven't actually had to cut a check for it. So for me to tell you what it costs, I'm not sure off the top of my head. My company pays for it, which is Jamison Sotheby's International Realty. This is a service that Jamison Sotheby's is offering to their brokers. Mm-hmm. So it's not something that I've set up personally, and that's the company in which I'm with.
And the helicopter is not some sort of whirly bird. It's one of those fancy helicopters, isn't it?
Well, it really depends on how many people. The last two times I've done it, I was in a much smaller helicopter the first time up because there was just a couple of us. And then the last time there were, five people, and we had another guy with us that had a camera and some equipment. So he, you know, that's a lot heavier. So they needed a bigger helicopter for that.
So do you foresee doing more of these as the year goes along? Do you think this is going to become sort of standard operating procedure in cities like Chicago, where it's a major metropolitan area and the traffic is just getting out of control beyond being able to handle?
You know, I think it's really per client. I mean, it's really, you know, it depends on what the client's looking for or what areas we need to cover. And again, the price point. So, which is, you know, because it is, like I told you, I don't know the price off the top of my head, but because it isn't cheap, it does depend on the price point of the client and, you know, how many properties do we need to look at. So it's really per client.
And so while we have you on the phone, too, go off on to just a different subject, while we have you, your expertise is probably needed and wanted by people perhaps looking for a home today. Are there areas of the Chicagoland region that are hotter than others? What would you suggest if people are out looking for homes?
Right now, I mean, there's a lack of inventory in a lot of areas. So there are multiple hot neighborhoods. I would say one of the hottest right now is definitely West Loop. West Loop is on fire. There is just very little inventory, and what is on the market goes quickly. Prices are high. So I would say West Loop is pretty, you know, popular right now with Google and everything.
Lauren Hsu, House Hunting by Helicopter, LaurenProperties.com. Thanks so much for being with us in the opening bell today.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Again, you can find her at LaurenProperties.com. By the way, there was a story in the Wall Street Journal recently about this, and three passenger Robinson R-44 Raven 2 helicopter and pilot, estimated to cost about $650 to $800 an hour. But the broker usually foots the bill for this. And to give you an idea of how growing hot this is, the CEO of Jamison Sotheby's in Chicago began offering this last fall and says they have budgeted about $100,000 for this year. Again, House Hunting by Helicopter.